Where's my microphone? It's right
here.
You
got it. It's in front of you right there.
It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis coming up at Top 5 at 5 after 5 o'clock. And Mr. Richard Roper is going to be here in the 5 o'clock hour as well because Pet Cemetery is out. Best of Enemies is out. That looks like that might be a... That's what Taraji P. Henson, who's from the... that's from The Empire.
Love her.
She's Jussie Smollett's mother, isn't she? Isn't that how that goes? Yeah.
She's in The Empire.
Yeah. And Shazam, which is, this is interesting.
Brings you back to childhood, me, at least.
Exactly. And then 6 o'clock hour, we're going to take more of an in-depth look into this situation where a guy who's a convicted mass murderer has been released from prison, and he is now taking up residency in Aurora, and the people in Aurora are not happy about it.
No.
So we'll explain exactly what happened in that story. I think it's a forgotten, one of the worst crime stories in Chicago, and it's sort of a forgotten story because it happened in the shadow of Gacy, and it happened in the shadow of the Tylenol killings and all that. So it was like a whole kind of a terrible moment in Chicago for that, for kind of terror killings. And this one was just as awful as any of them. And we'll explain all of that to you coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. Kevin Durkin is with us.
Yeah.
He is from Clifford Law, which is one of the biggest law firms here in the, not in the Chicago area, but in the nation. And certainly the premier one when it comes to aviation law and aviation injury law. And what is, to me, most, it's very tragic. The 737 MAX crash, we keep thinking about that. I think a lot of Americans stop and think, well, all right, that was an Ethiopian airline or that was Lion Air and that happened somewhere else. And, could those pilots have, would that ever have happened in America? Or the pilots differently trained? As it turns out, in the Ethiopian crash, those pilots were trying to do everything that was in the manual to fix this problem that Boeing knew about. Right?
That's correct.
And Kevin's one of the attorneys now representing the family of an American, young American woman who was lost in the Ethiopian crash. And, when it comes to things like this, people stop thinking, oh, well, it's, personal injury cases and lawyers are always out to make money on tragedy. You have to look at it differently. You have to look at it, how many lives could be saved here. Because if Boeing and, maybe some of the other folks along the line here who made mistakes, including, by the way, up to and including the federal government for some of the things that they did here, because they started letting the fox watch the hen house.
That's correct, Ro. That over the last several years, maybe the last 15 years, the FAA has delegated a lot of the certification responsibility to employees of Boeing who put both hats on, allegedly.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, their paycheck is from Boeing.
That might be one of the most disturbing things that we're starting to learn about this, because if the FAA has this cozy relationship with Boeing, safety is not the number one priority, would be the inference from all of that, that we're seeing what happened in this crash, that there were some things that were overlooked.
Certainly. This crash involved what's been known as a single point of failure. Any aerospace engineer will tell you one component failure or one product failure on an airplane should not cause the plane to crash and everyone perish.
It's always said that when a plane crashes, it's a cascade of events. It's one event that may lead to a series of other events, but there generally is an interruptible moment in those events. In this case, it was so... this may be such a single point, catastrophic single point, because if you have let's go back and explain what it is that we're looking at here. It's... As the plane is taking off, there are these sensors in the plane that are always calculating for the computer brain of the aircraft, always calculating how fast the plane is going, and what they call the angle of attack, which is which way the nose is pointed. And if the nose is pointed too high, and the plane slows down, you will then get a wing stall. The plane will fall out of the air. And so this system that they put in here is designed to keep that from happening, but it poorly reacted.
That's correct. The angle of attack is basically the angle between the wing and the airflow. The sensor is to tell the aircraft through the computer that the angle of attack is getting too high and the plane could go into an aerodynamic stall, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. The problem here is that with a faulty sensor, what it does is it tells the computer and tells the plane to have the tail move so the nose of the plane goes down, okay? So while it's the angle of attack's too high, that may be a good thing to get you back to level flight. Mm-hmm. But when you're at level flight and the plane's telling you your angle of attack's too high, it's taking you towards the ground.
Right. It pointed the plane down. At level flight, it pointed the plane into the ground.
Into the ground. And you're not – the altitude here was not much over 1,000 feet because above the ground at the time.
And there's no time there.
Well, there's very little time.
You have the New York Times had the captain's actual radio back to the control tower trying to request return to land the plane because he knew right away he wasn't able to control the plane would be what you would assume from that. It was a panicky voice. He said he wanted to return, obviously knew something was wrong and couldn't correct it. And in fact, the investigators are saying that the pilots followed the preliminary reports, that they followed all of the procedures that Boeing gave them and still couldn't stop the plane from nose diving. Pretty damning.
That's correct. It was 1 minute to the flight. He reported back that he wanted to return because he had flight control problems. And it's just come out in the last 48 hours from sources that they did follow the procedure that Boeing said he should have followed. Okay? So there you go.
So that's all Boeing can say here. And, you know, I'm shocked. I have such respect for the history of Boeing and for what they've done and the product they make, because the products that they have made over the years have been the finest ever in commercial aviation. But this seems like a catastrophic set of decisions that were made corporately, that this plane came out of the hangar, that this system. The way that this system is currently configured was allowed to be deemed airworthy is, I mean, and the plane they'll be able to fix this, and that plane will be airworthy. And I don't think people should be afraid once this thing is fixed of flying this particular aircraft. But it's just unbelievable to me that, especially after the first crash, that they didn't do anything about it.
Well, certainly. You know, that crash was October 29th. This plane was not delivered to Ethiopia Airlines to November 15th.
So 2 weeks after the crash.
It was delivered to them.
Yeah.
Okay? It's only a four-month-old plane. This isn't an old plane that had parts that were going wrong or any type of a aging plane issue. This was a brand-new aircraft.
So is this more of a software, based on Kevin, on your analysis of this so far, and it's early in the case, but is this a sense of a faulty, one faulty sensor on one particular aircraft or a larger software problem?
Well, you don't know how many sensors are faulty, right? Because we have two so far, we believe, and there could be many more. But it's also a training issue. You know, Boeing, it appears that Boeing rushed this through and wanted not to change the type of the plane, the 737, so that there would have to be additional pilot training by the airlines. So there was very
little. So in this new variant of the 737, because they have the 737-800 and 900, right, the two most recent, then they introduced this 737 MAX, which this has a different engine configuration on it. The engines are a little heavier and further forward than they are in those two previous ones I talked about. Right. So the actual flight dynamics of this aircraft are different.
That's correct. And there was no required. The airlines had no required simulator training. They had additional one than they had on the 800 and the 900, or no additional training.
Even though they're two different things to fly.
That's correct, and that was because airlines don't want to have to retrain all their pilots.
Right.
So they were trained in the 800 and 900, and they said this one will just be the same.
So they were sending out like a – you could qualify on the MAX if you were an 800 or 900 pilot. You could qualify on the 737 MAX by taking basically a computer test.
That's right.
On your iPad or your laptop or whatever.
That's true.
I mean, I do that every night when I go home for my simulator. And nobody wants me in the cockpit. It's just haunting to me.
It is.
That this company that is, and again, Chicago-based, amazing history, has always been well managed and well run.
Great safety record.
Yeah, amazing safety record. Amazing safety record. And yet that they could so stumble so dramatically on this. Now, they are attempting to react to it now, right?
Well, that's true, but it seems like we're the last country to ground the aircraft after the after this. So
we also have the most amount in flight, right? Most amount in I think we're close to 100 of them.
Correct. But we were the last country to do that, and it seems to me that we knew the most about this aircraft. Other countries were grounding it, and we kept it going. And then there was a lot of pressure put on Congress, and the Congress was putting pressure, and then it was grounded.
Yeah. Well, and we talked to pilots here that have flown that aircraft and did say that, you know, there are other things that these crews should have been, you know, aware of, but but that they agree that the training seemed unusual for them. That very rarely do you get a new variant, and all you got to do is take a test on an iPad.
That was just not enough. And I think that what you've hit on is the kind of the cozy relationship that's come between the FAA and the Boeing because of the way they handle certification. Yeah.
So Boeing is part of you're filing suit against Boeing, but then there's a separate claim, against the FAA?
That's true. We did file a suit against Boeing and Ethiopian Airlines under what's called the Montreal Convention and Raymond Aerospace, which is the manufacturer of the sensor. But you cannot file suit against the federal government directly without first going through an administrative claim. And so we filed that claim this morning. Mm-hmm. They have 6 months to act on the claim. They could say we accept it, which never happens, or they reject it. And then we have 6 months to file suit after that.
Got it.
Or until the statute of limitations.
We're out of time here, but it is an amazing story. This one woman who was lost, her family, you guys did a press conference earlier today, family is very devastated. Moving. 24-year-old girl who was going and doing literally God's work in Ethiopia. Working for a healthcare, a religious-based healthcare consortium to bring healthcare to people who don't have it, and it is an absolute and the family can't bring any part of her home because there's nothing but a charred hole in the ground. Where it happened. It is unbelievable.
Ralph Nader's grandniece too. I know he's been out talking about it as a consumer advocate.
Incredible family.
Relative.
Yeah. Incredible family.
All right, Kevin Durkin from Clifford Law. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it. Thank you for being here. Let's check in with Kim Gordon. What's going on at the top of the hour in the news?
Roe, a heartbroken family speaking out after a man found in Kentucky turned out not to be missing Aurora boy Timothy Pitson.